All right. Hello, I'm Dominic Fano. I'm a family physician from Oxford, Michigan. And today we'll be talking with Glenn Krause, who is the founder and CEO of Core CDI. Glenn is a subject matter expert in clinical documentation improvement, and he's been working with residents and physicians for a countless number of years trying to improve the documentation side of their of medicine. So, you know, today our topic will be the perils of communication and common missteps that physicians are making. So, Glenn, you know, from your experience, what are some common perils that you can share with us that can help, you know, future doctors and in specifically documentation?
Well, good question, Dominic. Some of the common perils are lack of a chief complaint. Every note, regardless of setting, must have a chief complaint in the patient's own words. Oftentimes, I'll see a patient here in follow-up in the office or in the hospital setting. I'll have a diagnosis as opposed to a chief complaint in the patient's own words. For instance, I'll see sometimes chief complaint respiratory failure. Now, we all can rationalize that the physician, or the, excuse me, the patient did not mention that as their chief complaint. So the reality is chief complaint is a statement of what brought the patient in, why is the patient being seen, what's going on with the patient in the patient's own words, as opposed to a diagnosis.
What are some other perils that you think would be significant for some new doctors?
I would say right off the bat, history of present illness. HPI stands for present illness. And many a time we'll have a situation where the doctor will list the patient's chronic stable conditions or history of conditions in the first couple of sentences of the history of present illness, which detracts from the conciseness and the organizational outcome of the history of present illness. So the focus must be on the eight elements of a history of present illness, including those past illness that have relevance to the patient's complaint. A good example would be a patient who comes in with shortness of breath, and they have a condition of COPD, or a patient who comes in with chest pain, and they have a history of an MI with a CABG times two. Those situations are important to know because they're relevant to the sign or symptom. So I would say focusing on the history of present illness and touching base with as many of the eight elements as is relevant to the patient's nature of presenting problem or chief complaint.
So how much information really needs to be in the history of present illness?
That's a good question. As I mentioned, there are eight elements of history of present illness, and obviously the location, quality, severity, duration, and so forth. And as much information as needed to show the patient severity of illness to match the intensity of service of what I'm going to order, and to tell the patient's story. So I can't really say you must have eight. On the other hand, the physician wants to be as complete as possible in terms of taking an inventory to best explain and tell the patient's story. Why am I seeing this patient? What's going on with the patient?
Glenn, can you touch base on, you know, as we move, you know, further into the, you know, your progress note, you know, the significance of lab work and other imaging studies that may help, you know, guide one's, you know, E&M coding and essentially their like plan of care.
That's another good question, Dominic. Sometimes what I see as an oversight is the EHR will blow in the labs or the results of the radiology report. On the other hand, from the standpoint of good clinical medicine and E&M assignment under the amount and complexity of data, it's important for the physician in the progress note to acknowledge the results, not just simply cut and paste or blow in from the EHR the results. What is the clinical significance? So how I phrase that, how I expect physicians to communicate effectively the results of the test, whether it's radiology or lab or stress test or whatever, is to include it in their assessment. In other words, if the doctor is saying chest X-ray shows a haziness in the left lower lobe, include that in that diagnostic criteria that you use in your assessment and plan of care. So it sets the tone for clinical criteria that your physician is using to come up with a diagnosis. It helps from the E&M standpoint to interpret the data, the results, but also from the standpoint of communication of patient care and to show the medical decision making is to include that in a brief discussion about the diagnosis in my assessment, and that sets the tone for my plan of care. Why am I ordering antibiotics? Why am I ordering further tests? Because I have my clinical rationale in the assessment and plan.
Glenn, one of the things that you really stress is having everything congruent from your history of present illness to your physical exam and your assessment and plan. Can you touch base on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the biggest, I'm a big reader of the Medicare administrative contractors, listservs, and what I'm seeing in the industry, regardless of setting, progress note, H&P, ER, office note, urgent care, is oftentimes we'll have an assessment, but we don't have any way of tracing it back to the patient's presenting signs and symptoms. And what transpires is obviously ineffective communication of patient care. On the other hand, from the standpoint of E&M assignment, I'm seeing the reviewers for Medicare and other payers downcoding particular E&M levels because the diagnosis is not traceable back to the patient's chief complaint of history of present illness. And I often refer to that as the Rocky and Bullwinkle rabbit out of the hat cartoon, where Rocky Bullwinkle pulls a rabbit out of a hat, but it wasn't a rabbit. It's a tiger, a lion, a leopard. Really important from the standpoint of congruency of clinical judgment and medical decision making to be sure that everything that I put in my assessment can be traced back to why the patient's being seen. And that speaks for my plan of care. I have my assessment traced back to my sign of symptoms of chief complaint with clinical rationale, and I have a plan of care that's rational and congruent with my assessment. So just good patient medicine to be able to have a roadmap beginning with your chief complaint, history of present illness.
You know, Glenn, if we were to change gears a little bit, I think the next main topic to discuss would be medical necessity and its role in medicine. And, you know, when I think of medical necessity, you know, a lot of patients come in and they're requesting, you know, they want an MRI of their back or, you know, a CAT scan of one thing or another. And, you know, sadly, medicine doesn't work that way in this day and age. So, you know, can you touch base on the role of, you know, documentation specifically in medical necessity? And what does really like medical necessity mean to someone who's not familiar with the term?
Well, that's an excellent question. You know, of course, all the payers have a definition, including Medicare, of medical necessity. But medical necessity is really a clinical decision and not a payment decision. In terms of medical necessity, you mentioned the example of the patient who comes in with back pain and they want a MRI, and you know it doesn't meet one of the five red flags for an MRI. In that situation, you know, physicians shouldn't be forced into writing a script or writing an order for MRI. It's based on the clinical judgment of the physician. In a particular case where that patient wants an MRI, for the medical necessity is obviously not there based on the doctor's clinical judgment and clinical picture. So in that particular case, I would recommend obviously having a discussion with the patient about why the MRI is not the first step of therapy for workup, and include that in my note as part of my assessment and plan, and you could potentially bill E&M based on counseling and coordination of care. If you're looking at medical necessity for additional tests that the patient may need, really medical necessity is tied up in four different specific elements. The first is the number, acuity, severity, and duration of problems that I'm addressing. So that would be back to your history of present illness. If you talk about comorbid conditions that impact your medical decision-making for the management of that patient, for that inpatient encounter, that obviously impacts medical necessity as well. Any previous treatment that the patient had for that particular diagnosis or finding is important to elaborate in the chart. And the amount of the body areas or organ systems or physical exams that I have to work up in terms of determining what the final diagnosis or provisional diagnosis also demonstrates medical necessity. So those four elements are important or crucial to have in my chart as I communicate my clinical judgment and medical decision making. And by virtue of having that good communication, your physician is going to demonstrate the medical necessity for that visit or any additional workup that's planned congruent with the assessment.
You know, Glenn, in my own experience, you know, medical necessity didn't really come into play until I was attending. So, you know, for the medical students and residents, this may not really hit home for, you know, can you kind of touch base on, you know, the importance of it and really like the different scenarios where medical necessity is a necessity, if you will?
Oh, okay. From the standpoint of, let's say, a resident or a student, medical necessity is taking on a very important meaning, or a new meaning, if you will, because physicians are now being profiled, and Medicare has as part of their MIPS program, one of the elements of the quality payment program is cost. So, and who controls cost is actually the physician who orders the service. If you think about any care that the patient receives, there's only one service that doesn't require an order. It's a screening mammogram. So every order that the physician offers, whether it's a definitive therapeutic workup or a diagnostic workup, physician needs to be thinking in the back of their minds, okay, if I'm going to be judged based on the cost, quality, and outcomes, I should be thinking, is the test nice to know, or is it going to change my management of this patient? And really focus on capturing, why am I ordering the test? It doesn't require a thesis or a dissertation. It just requires a few key sentences going back to my history of present illness and my results of my physical exam, and tying all that information together in terms of my assessment and plan. So my assessment includes my diagnostic criteria or discussion of the particular diagnosis and the reason why I'm ordering a test. You're going to be touching base or taking into account medical necessity. So medical necessity may not impact the physician's pocketbook immediately, but down the road, it's certainly going to impact their reimbursement in terms of E&M codes that Medicare pays the next year. So thinking about medical necessity is germane to being a physician at this time.
Now, Glenn, as we move forward, if we were to touch base on some shortfalls in documentation that you've seen over the years, you know, are there specific things that you think, you know, future doctors need to know about, you know, lessons that you've learned over the past number of years from your experiences?
Oh, absolutely. You know, in the inpatient setting, Medicare has a 2-midnight rule. All payers are really trying to drive cost or profits by looking at a chart and trying to say this meets the level of care of observation versus inpatient. Or even in the progress notes, of a hospital setting or in the office, it all goes back to third-party payers controlling the purse strings and not finding ways or trying to find ways not to pay for the physician's work that was actually performed. It's a couple of the oversights that really hit home in terms of impacting physicians, both from a value cost of care, quality output, is leaving diagnosis out of the assessment. In other words, we know that physicians can code based on statements such as rule out, probable, possible, from a physician billing point of view. What I'm seeing is oftentimes a lack of understanding that provisional diagnoses still count towards medical decision-making, medical necessity for a hospital level of care, whether it's observation or inpatient or progress note in the office. It's important to understand that when you have a patient who comes in with a symptom that's embedded with many disease processes, when I do my assessment, evaluation, and management, that my assessment includes all the relevant diagnoses, not this laundry list, but those two, maybe three diagnoses that I'm considering and going to be initiating additional workup, whether it's lab work or radiology work or an MRI. Why is it that I'm ordering these tests, and what are my provisional diagnoses? You don't have to use the term rule out, suspected, probable. I like the terms of provisional, provisional diagnosis, concerned diagnosis, diagnostic considerations, something along those lines, because it really speaks to the doctor's thought processes. My provisional diagnosis are A, B, and C, or my differential diagnosis are F, G, and H, okay? And that helps explain medical necessity for the work that I'm performing and the tests that I'm ordering. So that's one of the biggest perils I oversight. Oh, and I think one more would be oftentimes in the, I see a lot of copy and paste in the office and also in the hospital setting. And many a time a diagnosis is either ruled out or not contextually correct, or it's no longer in consideration. And I see that in inaccurate information being perpetuated in office notes and in the hospital setting, because I'm copy and pasting without taking the time to update the note. So that's a major peril that I see is quite detrimental to patient care, whether it's E&M assignment, whether it's effective communication or patient care for the next physician who's going to assume care.
Glenn, can you touch base on the negative impact of some of these downfalls, you know, including like copy and pasting and, you know, missing key points in the history of present illness and then the plan of care?
Well, first of all, the standard of documentation, or this record stands for communication of patient care. It's not only a billing function or billing tool, it's a communication of care tool. So when you think about medicine, the germane to medicine is patient care. Why is it important to document effectively, including starting with the chief complaint of history of present illness? Because it drives your thought processes of your physical exam. It drives the thought processes of, okay, what am I seeing? Where's the patient been? Where am I going and why? And so at the end of the day, we want strong, effective, concise, consistent, contextually correct communication of patient care for obviously the benefit of the patient. Some of the downfalls that I see to the patient and the physician as well is obviously in the hospital setting, we have situations where the UR utilization review or the case manager who wants to do best for the patient in terms of ensuring the right level of care being negotiated from the insurance company. If we don't have solid and effective documentation, who loses as a patient? Because they may be in the wrong status. There is reimbursement or cost implications for patients who are in observation versus inpatient. There's a difference in how the patient is billed and what's expected to be paid. So obviously, the patient suffers to some extent. On the other hand, is a detriment to, let's say, hospitalist who's assuming care. And so my standard of documentation is the documentation should be effective and complete to the extent the next hospitalist taken over, like the nocturnist, or the next hospitalist who's assuming care from the other hospitalist who's going off duty, doesn't have time to read the entire chart. So the documentation must be succinct, but clear and consistent, so the doctor can, the next doctor can assume care where the first physician left off. If you think about consultants are called for many reasons, and they're looking for where's the doctor thinking? Why am I thinking this diagnosis? Why did I order a consult? That's important for the consultant to come up with a reasonable opinion or some guidance on how to manage the patient. So if there's a lack of a good patient story from the beginning, it impacts the consultant's ability to render a clinical opinion or a provisional diagnosis or recommendations for treatment. So at the end of the day, physician is not doing justice to the patient and other physicians by taking shortcuts with copy and paste and not including the provisional diagnosis of what I'm thinking.
Glenn, I think that wraps up all the questions I have for you today. I just wanted to thank you for your time and sharing your experience and knowledge in the subject of clinical documentation.
Okay, thank you so much. We look forward to the next podcast in a short time.
For sure. Take care, Glenn.
Thank you.